The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by MICU, Baltimore's credit union, and the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome back. Good to have you all with us here on this windy, rainy day. And I just say that to remind you all that this Monday, we will be bringing you two documentaries that we did on the Vietnam War on Memorial Day. We produced these documentaries. We were traveled to Vietnam for 6 weeks, and we were there. We went back with a bunch of veterans to Vietnam and told stories on both sides of the Vietnam War. Veterans meeting veterans, and we have two incredible stories coming up. I'm just reminding you now, those stories, one will be a story of bringing medals back to a Vietnamese family. One of the veterans had a box of medals of the first man he killed in Vietnam. It haunted him his whole time, and he wanted to find the family. We found the family and returned those medals, and it was a really powerful moment of healing that took place. And called Wandering Souls, because when the Vietnamese believe that when someone's killed, if you don't have the body to take care of after death, then the soul wanders forever. Well, the soul was brought home with these medals in this box. And the second story is a story of a man named Woody Curry, who lives here in Baltimore City, Vietnam veteran, grew up here in the inner city of our communities, became an interpreter, helicopter gunner, and his story of healing and what happened to him and his love for the Vietnamese people as a soldier and what happened to him when he returned. So all that coming up Monday to honor our veterans, two stories from our documentary series, Shared Weight, talking about Vietnam. And right now it's time for a series we call Below the Radar. Below the Radar are stories that you don't always hear in the newspapers here in Baltimore City or other places, or unless you read some national news. We don't always hear about them. We think they're important to address and bring to the table. And we have with us here the story. This is a story about Guatemala. We'll let our listeners, our guests, talk about that story. And we have with us Jeffrey Davis, who is a associate professor and chair of the Department of Political Science at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, UMBC. Jeff, good to have you with us.
Good morning.
Is it Jeffrey or Jeff?
Jeffrey's fine.
Jeffrey, okay.
Yeah, Jeff's fine.
And Anita Isaacs is with us. Dr. Anita Isaacs is Benjamin Collins Professor of Social Sciences and Associate Professor of Political Science at Haverford College. She joins us by phone. Dr. Isaacs, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And had a piece in the New York Times that covered what we're about to talk about. And this is a trial that takes place in Guatemala, of a former president of Guatemala, accused of genocide. And we forget about this war and what happened. But let me start with you, Jeffrey, in studio here. But tell us what, because you sent something outlining the trial. Talk about what happened here and why it's even important for us in America to think or address this.
Well, this is a trial based on a genocide that occurred during Guatemala's 30-year civil war. During that war, more than 200,000 people were killed, 40,000 and more were disappeared. That's around 3% of their population. So that's, to give you an idea, that's about 8 million Americans, if we put it in our terms. And during that war, Rios Montt took power in a coup in 1982, and he was responsible for launching a scorched earth campaign against the Mayan Guatemalans in the northwest part of the country. And 30 years later, he's been, after efforts by human rights groups and victims groups, he's been tried and convicted of genocide and crimes against humanity in Guatemala. The conviction came just a couple of weeks ago. The result in the last week, though, was the Constitutional Court of Guatemala has annulled the verdict and the sentence and the last month of the trial. So resetting us back to April 19th and really leaving a lot of questions about where the trial goes from here, where the case goes from here.
And Anita Isaacs, you wrote a piece with others in the New York Times trying to get under this issue, and your piece was called We Enabled Genocide, but the elite committed it. So talk a bit about why you think that it's important that Americans understand what's going on here. I think most people in this country right now have no idea what we're talking about.
Yeah. It's important for a couple of reasons. It's important because it's the only genocide that has actually occurred in our hemisphere. There have been genocides in Darfur, in Rwanda, in Cambodia, in Bosnia, and somehow those have been on our radar screen. But the genocide right next door in Guatemala has somehow, as your program's called, sort of passed below the radar screen. And so it's important to understand why that genocide has occurred, that there has been such brutal violence right next door to us. And, you know, as your other guest says, it's important to understand because it is a genocide in which the United States played a significant part. And so it's important to understand what U.S. foreign policy has been in the region, particularly as we continue to grapple, and again grapple more seriously these days, with developing policies that address issues of issues connected to Mexico and Central America, not least the current drug violence, but also immigration.
And I think it's important. You know, we talk about racism in the world, and one of the aspects of racism that we often don't talk about was the racism and genocide against Native people in this hemisphere, and how in many ways, Jeffrey and Anita, that Guatemala itself is one of the most racist nations in the Western Hemisphere in terms of the majority population who are Native people, who are Mayans for the mm-hmm. most part.
Yeah, and this genocide and the struggle that they've had in trying to win justice for this genocide is a great example of that. When you listen to the testimony that occurred over the last 2 months, you hear accounts of brutality that you can't even imagine, and that make you cringe, and every part of your humanity is touched by it. And the soldiers who were taking part in this were convinced, were trained, that every single Mayan they met was an enemy, what they called an enemy within or an internal enemy. And they were completely dehumanized as a result of that training and of that propaganda, and that enabled them to commit this kind of violence.
And one of the things you wrote in your piece, Anita, let's explore this a bit. It was really shocking. You wrote, "Why do you ask why Indians were killed?" A member of the oligarchy once asked me. A better question is why we didn't kill more Indians.
Yes. Yeah, I guess, yes. I mean, that quote is an extreme example of the kinds of things that members of the oligarchy have told me over the past 15 years of research. But it's by far not the only such quote. It's representative of a significant sector of Guatemalan society, and it's representative of the sector of Guatemalan society that continues to hold the levers of power in that country. I just add to that the racism that allowed or enabled the genocide to occur in the 1980s has not disappeared today. Guatemala remains, for all intents and purposes, what I call a virtual apartheid society. And it's a society in which a mestizo, mixed race, or white elite continues to control power, and in which they continue to marginalize and exclude the majority or close to majority of their population who are indigenous Mayans. And it's a racism that is now reproducing itself in renewed political violence the Guatemalan countryside. In many of the same areas where the genocide in the 1980s occurred, there's renewed political violence today.
So, I mean, but again, let's talk a bit about why Americans should care, beyond the fact people care about human rights around the world. I mean, there's a direct connection between, that many would make, between our policies of 30 years ago, and what's happening now.
Right. Well, this really started, you can trace it back to 1954 when the United States supported a coup in Guatemala against then President Arbenz. And the war started shortly after that and went for 3 decades. And during the Cold War, the United States government, of course, supported the right-wing governments in Guatemala that were fighting the left-leaning insurgents and rebels and then blaming the Mayans for supporting them. And one of the fascinating things you saw during this trial is one of the ways they finally got these people to justice was by using U.S. declassified CIA and State Department documents to prove their case and to corroborate witness testimony. So we have cables from U.S. officials in Guatemala recounting exactly what was happening, exactly what the Guatemalan military was doing, and responses back from U.S. officials in the State Department, advocating more support for these policies.
So is there a danger here for some people in the, who were in American government that they could be brought into this, Anita, indicted or questioned?
Possibly. I think that the era of justice probably in Guatemala is nearing an end.
The era of justice, you said?
The era of criminal justice for war crimes. I'm not sure whether we're going to see a lot more trials. I have a feeling that this trial is going to provoke demands for moving forward that indigenous communities are not going to be able to push the envelope on justice any longer. But I wanted to say one other thing about why the U.S. should care that's related to the documentaries that you talked about. The United States was most actively involved in Guatemala, as Jeffrey said, during the 1950s, overthrowing the Arbenz government, and during the initial phase of the counterinsurgency. This was a 36-year-long civil war. The genocide happened in the early 1980s, but it began in the 1960s. And in the 1960s, the U.S. played an extremely active role in training the Guatemalan military, both in U.S. Army schools in the United States, in Kansas and at the School of the Americas, but also in situ, in Guatemala. The Green Berets were deployed to Guatemala. They used Guatemala as a terrain to practice counterinsurgency techniques. They used napalm bombing. Techniques that they would then later deploy in Vietnam. So Guatemala was kind of a staging ground for the Vietnam War as well.
Yeah, we shouldn't, though, ignore the links we have to Rios Montt himself. Elliot Abrams, who was the Assistant Secretary of State for Human Rights, supported Rios Montt when he was in office, claiming in the media that he had made progress on human rights and that he had reduced political killing, and arguing that that kind of action needed to be rewarded and encouraged, and advocating that we reinstate military aid during the Reagan administration. President Reagan himself came out saying that Montt was dedicated to democracy and that his human rights record was being given a bum rap. And the administration, the Carter administration and the Reagan administration, both were supportive of Guatemalan policies, but especially during the Reagan administration.
Again, I agree completely with that, but I've tried to make my focus on domestic players reflects the fact that it's very convenient for both the Guatemalan military and the Guatemalan elite to describe the war and to write off their roles in the war by blaming them on a geopolitical, geostrategic situation and on the U.S., that they were no more than puppets of the United States, that they were forced to fight the U.S. Cold War in their country, that they had no options. And I think that's a misreading of the situation. Yes, the United States played a critical and nefarious role in the Guatemalan civil war, armed conflict from the beginning through the Reagan administration. There is not a doubt about that. But they played a role, and they were manipulated and used also by the Guatemalan elite, which very much wanted to quash the guerrilla insurgency, and in the process also were quite willing to commit genocide or to conduct a scorched earth policy in order to remove indigenous communities from land and from resources that they wanted to control themselves.
Yeah, that's great.
So I think that by blaming the United States too much or by shining the spotlight too much on the United States, one
right.
also could ignore or whitewash the role of Guatemalans in this conflict.
Yeah, that's a great point.
It's an important point. And so I'm very curious as we wind this down, Jeffrey, what now?
Well, that's the mystery. Basically, this latest constitutional court ruling is based not on any facts that were proved in court, but based on a procedural argument that that Montt's lawyers made. Basically, he showed up on the first day of the trial with a brand new lawyer, and the lawyer immediately tried to get two of the three judges recused because he had past dealings with them, and the court ruled that it couldn't do that at this stage of the case and dismissed the lawyer. So Rios Montt was without his own lawyer for the first afternoon of the trial. He had to use his co-defendant's lawyer. The next day, he appeared with his own lawyers again. And so the Montt defense team is claiming that that was a due process violation and really destroys the entire trial. And so the question now is, do you need to have the trial again from the beginning? Can you start on that April 19th date, or is there some other remedy? And the Constitutional Court is threatening to make more rulings, which may impact it one way or the other.
I want to thank both of you for being with us. Dr. Jeffrey Davis is Associate Professor and Chair in the Department of Political Science at UMBC. Dr. Anita Isaacs is the Benjamin Collis Professor of Social Sciences and Associate Professor of Political Science at Haverford College. They're working on ideas on this, and other articles will be on our website at steinershow.org. And Jeffrey Davis and Anita Isaacs, thank you both so much.
Thank you, Mark.
Thanks.
We're going to take a very brief break. When we come back, we're joined by Leonard Pitts, Jr. Leonard Pitts, of course, syndicated columnist, Pulitzer Prize winning journalist, talking about his latest work, Freeman, a novel that starts when slaves were freed. Incredible book. Stay with us. We'll be right back.